Hello and welcome to Deep North. My name is Eric Pomerinke, and I'm here today in the studio with Iceland Review contributing writer Beth Rogers. Today we are going to be taking a look at her most recent piece for the magazine, Goodbye to the Grind, How Kaffi Valeria Serves History and Happiness by the Cup.
The oldest known evidence of kaffi in Iceland is a letter that Lárus Gottrup, a lawyer in Þingeyri, wrote to Árni Magnússon, a professor and manuscript collector, on November 16, 1703. They had spoken at the Alþingi, a national parliament meeting, that summer, and Árni was upset that his friend had forgotten to send him the kaffi he had requested by spring ship from Copenhagen. To avoid leaving Árni stimulant-free, Gottrup sent 114 grams of coffee beans, about a quarter of a pound, and noted that he himself did not like coffee. After all, I'm not a fan of it. Nowadays, cafes dot the Icelandic landscape, from the bustling streets of Reykjavik to the most remote rural villages, each with its own character and charm, yet all sharing the same commitment to keep the community buzzing. And in one small West Iceland town, a fresh brew is bubbling. Café Valeria, a specialty café steeping tradition and innovation in a country with a caffeine history as deep and intriguing as a cup of its finest roast. Like most modern nations, Icelanders rely on a nudge of warmth and caffeine to get themselves going in the morning. Icelanders consume an average of 8.3 kilograms, about 18.3 pounds, of coffee per person every year, with a long-standing coffee culture that sees them drinking it at all hours of the day, from the morning ritual to social gatherings. In Nobel laureate Haldor Laxness' works, coffee comes up frequently as a sign of hospitality, togetherness, and comfort. In his work Independent People, he writes, "Presently the smell of coffee began to fill the room. This was morning's hallowed moment. In such fragrance, the perversity of the world is forgotten, and the soul is inspired with faith in the future." Colombian Jan van Haas and Icelander Marta Magnusdottir have woven a modern tale of resilience, innovation, and community through their journey bringing coffee beans from Colombia to Iceland and opening their café, Café Valeria, in Grundarfjörður, West Iceland. Their story begins with Jan's departure from Colombia, driven by difficult circumstances, and his arrival in Iceland, where he found not just a refuge, but a home. Marta recalls Jan's early days traveling the world, saying he had to leave Colombia and he ended up in Spain, and we met in Sardinia. A few years later, he was here. In the village of less than 1,000 people, Café Valeria stands as a beacon of Colombian coffee culture. Owned and operated by the husband and wife team, the café reflects Jan's dedication to blending the rich coffee traditions of his homeland with the communal ethos of his adopted country. As you walk into the shop, you notice the books of Gabriel García Márquez, both in Spanish and Icelandic. Then you hear Latin music and you smell the fresh coffee aroma, Jan shares, describing the ambiance that envelops visitors upon entering the café. On the outside, the tiny house that is home to the coffee shop is painted with bright red coffee cherries and illustrations of Jan and Marta. On the inside, it opens to a warm, terracotta-colored storefront decorated with plants, hanging vines, and signs inviting customers to try ordering in Icelandic. The clay coffee cups are solid and heavy, painted turquoise around the rim. Like everything in the space, they were designed by Jan and Marta, then shaped and fired by Colombian artists. "Everything in the shop is here because I like it," Jan says. Two Coffea Arabica plants live in pots within the shop, three determined seedlings sprouting at the bottom of one shrub. Their glossy dark green leaves release a faint herbaceous scent, mingling with the sharp, smoky aroma of roasted beans. As the seasons change, the flowers give way to coffee cherries, initially green but maturing into a vibrant red, each one cradling the precious coffee beans, the seeds of the plant, within. Next to the hulking black roaster sits a burlap bag of green coffee beans, wafting their fresh grassy scent, which mingles with an early wine-like sweetness that signals the beginnings of fermentation. Like all things you'll find inside Café Valeria, Jan and Marta potted the coffea plants because they like them, and to see if they would take. Coffee does not grow in Iceland. It grows best near the equator and at high altitudes above 2,000 meters, 6,500 feet, with the most cultivation occurring in the Americas, the Caribbean, Africa, the Middle East, and Asia. Coffee grows about as far from Iceland as you can get. The three cherries Jan and Marta were able to coax from their tree last year are not even enough to produce one shot of espresso. As Marta puts it, we like to have the trees here to show people where the drink they're drinking comes from, and also that many coffee cherries are needed for their espresso. Somewhere, in our case, in Colombia, there is a farmer who did all the work of planting, harvesting, processing, shipping, and more so that they can enjoy a simple cup of coffee. As Jan puts it, there's no such thing as just a coffee. Downstairs, the couple have worked hard to refurbish what was once a dreary, dirt-floored cellar into a colorful, inviting space of low ceilings, hanging plants, twinkling lights, and comfortable cushions. Those who live in Grundefjörður are just as welcome as tourists who pass by, hoping to get photos of the imposing Kirkjufell mountain or stop at a restaurant up the street for a bite of fresh fish from the harbor.
Coffee was not always king in Iceland. Before Árni Magnússon whinged about the lack of Java on the island in 1703, Icelanders, like citizens of many countries, drank beer throughout the day, though it was usually watered down. English sailors in the 1700s drank watered-down rum, known as grog, and the origin of the word groggy, which has now become a synonym for sleepy, slow, and drunk-seeming behavior, whether you have been imbibing or not. By the time of the Industrial Revolution in the 1760s, caffeine had become a clear favorite among European workers who needed a jolt of energy to stay focused throughout long hours at work.
In the future, besides perfecting the shop, Jan would like to expand their coffee operation to build relationships with more independent farmers in Colombia. He would especially like to encourage them to abandon old practices like raising the forest to create more fields for crops. Instead, he would like to encourage them to plant among the forest. Forest farming is a gentler and more traditional practice, resulting in a smaller but higher quality crop. High-value specialty crops like coffee plants are protected under the forest canopy, which can be adjusted to their optimal shade level. The method is less devastating to the land and helps conserve habitat for wildlife. This commitment to small-batch, sustainable coffee practices guides Café Valeria's approach to coffee sourcing. Marta also emphasizes the importance of direct trade, a principle that allows the couple to pay farmers fair prices while ensuring the quality of their coffee. She proudly states, "When we started, Jan contacted his brother and his sister-in-law, Hector and Sandy, and they helped us source the beans directly from farmers in Kenpo, Colombia." Jan's journey into the world of coffee roasting and Marta's foray into the Icelandic coffee scene underscore their commitment to quality, sustainability, and education. Jan admits, it's been a fake it till you make it kind of journey, a constant learning and improving. The sentiment is echoed by Marta, who enthusiastically embraces their mission to educate customers about the origins and nuances of coffee. Both Jan and Marta knew Café Valeria not just as a business, but as a medium for cultural exchange and a platform for celebrating the richness of Colombian coffee. Before I left the shop, I sampled jam made from coffee cherries, breathed deeply of the woody scent of coffee leaves, which can be used to brew tea, and observed coffee beans darkening in 30-second increments of roasting. At first, we thought it would be nice to have the roaster going all day long for the customers, says Marta, laughing. But it roasts so quickly. We realized that if we got distracted for just a few seconds, we could ruin a whole batch. Coming together. Café Valeria's integration into the Gründerfjeller community has been met with warmth and support. Marta reflects on the communal atmosphere that Café Valeria fosters, noting how the setting somehow encourages and sparks conversation among the guests. Jan continues, I enjoy how easily people start chatting with each other. The space makes it comfortable to start conversations with strangers and have a good time while drinking a cup of coffee. What I enjoy most is seeing the faces of the customers after they have the first sip of coffee or chocolate, and they say to each other how good the drink is. The sense of home extends beyond their cafe, touching on the broader Icelandic tradition where coffee is the reason to pause and connect with others. As Café Valeria looks to the future, Jan and Marta remain grounded in their vision of growth, sustainability, and outreach to the public. They envision Café Valeria as a place where education and enjoyment go hand in hand, where customers can learn about the journey of coffee from bean to cup. Marta's personal journey from skepticism to passion underscores the transformative power of their venture, not just for them, but for the thirsty folks they serve. She muses on her evolution. I didn't get really excited about coffee until my first trip to Colombia when I visited the farmers. But then I said, oh wow, it is so fantastic that I get to be on the other end of the production process, showing people what good coffee means, respectfully handling the farmer's product. Their efforts to inspire and enrich do not end with good coffee. They want a good life for themselves and their customers too. As I settle into my cushioned seat and huddle around my steaming cup, Marta reveals that she has a degree in education, and she would like to write books for children in the future. Her stories, aimed at Icelandic children, offer a glimpse into the wider world, echoing the educational ethos of Café Valeria. Through coffee and storytelling, Jan and Marta aim to foster a deeper understanding and appreciation of diverse cultures and the natural environment.
In Iceland, coffee was initially only available to the wealthy, who could afford the expensive import prices. As more Icelanders picked up the habit, coffee beans dropped in cost, appearing in price lists starting in 1776 at 32 shillings a pound, slightly lower than the common valuation of small coffee pots. By 1819, Icelanders were importing 44 tons of coffee per year, amounting to 800 grams of the precious beans for each Icelander.
Getting off the grounds. The challenges of starting and running a business were difficult. The cafe was so old and needed so much renovation that it was difficult to find contractors willing to work on it. Though the couple purchased the house in 2021, they did not open the cafe until the summer of 2023. Marta reminisces about the early days of their venture, the uncertainty of COVID-19, and the logistical hurdles of importing a roasting machine, which was more expensive than the coffee house itself. Then there's the coffee. To get to Café Valeria, it goes through a long process that begins with the selection of beans in Colombia, which are harvested and shipped to Iceland. Those beans are then roasted in the cafe to varying degrees, depending on the desired flavor profile. The roasting process is crucial as it develops the beans' flavor and aroma. Marta and Jan were pleasantly surprised that it was easy to source the beans for the cafe. Colombian authorities and the Colombian Coffee Association take care to guard their reputation of being a country producing high-quality coffee beans. Before exporting the beans, Sandy, Hector, and the local farmers need to go through several steps to ensure they meet governmental quality standards. Luckily, Iceland and Colombia made a free trade business agreement in 2014, making imports more accessible for Jan and Marta. Once they have arrived and are roasted, the coffee beans are ground. The coarseness of the grind depends on the brewing method to be used and affects the final taste of the coffee. Finer grounds are typically used for espresso, while coarser grounds are better suited for methods like French press or cold brew. The next step is brewing, where hot water extracts the coffee's flavors and aromas. In Arne Magnusson's day, before the ease and convenience of today's brewing methods, dark roasted coffee beans arrived by ship and were sold to jittery buyers in cloth bags. The beans were ground up or crushed by hand and boiled in a pan over the fire at home, which would result in a watery, bitter, acidic coffee. Finally, the brewed coffee is ready to be served. Each step of the coffee-making process, from bean to cup, plays a significant role in determining the beverage's final taste and quality, offering a rich and complex experience that has captivated people around the globe. Despite Café Valeria's commitment to serving the most delicious cup of coffee they can offer to every customer, Marta is no coffee snob. When I observe that this coffee is much better than the dehydrated coffee crystals with which I started my drive to Snæfellsnes that morning, she smiles. "Nothing wrong with instant coffee. The best cup of coffee is the one that you like," she says, offering me a cinnamon roll.
Writing in 1849 from the island of Flatey, West Iceland, Reverend Ólafur Sivertsen observed Icelanders' love of the dark brew. Quote, "Now there is hardly a farm in the West that does not enjoy coffee, so to speak, on equal footing with food, in some places twice, if not three times a day, and strong to boot. Coffee drinking has become so popular that it's considered impolite among passers-by and sailors to not sit down for a coffee, no matter the conditions at sea or the weather. The farmer can hardly go to his duties until he has had his refreshment, and the laborer can hardly go to work until he has been gladdened by a cup of coffee."
Bean bliss. For Jan and Marta, coffee serves as a comforting constant, a source of warmth and community, in a land that can often feel isolated from the European mainland, or even the sister countries of Northern Europe. Jan and Marta's journey with Café Valeria is more than the story of a coffee shop. It is a narrative of immigration, adaptation, and the creation of a new home. It reflects the broader story of Iceland's coffee culture, a story of how an island in the North Atlantic has embraced the world through its love of coffee, forging connections across continents and cultures. For the two owners, this is the heart of what they do in their cheerful little coffee shop by the sea in Grundefjörður. Marta doesn't want to compare her little coffee shop to larger chains. She and Jan don't want that kind of stress. Right now, they are the only employees of Café Valeria and are happy not to be anyone's boss. The goal is not to take over the world, she insists, topping a latte with a perfect dollop of foam. It's to celebrate Colombia and Colombian coffee, right here in Iceland. You want to visit Colombia now, right? As I sink into an overstuffed chair, I sip my coffee and watch the video of Colombian sun and kilometers of green trees, highlighting the very plants my coffee came from. After an afternoon by the sea in Snæfellsnes, I find I do feel a longing to walk among the coffee cherries and sunny brambles of the Colombian forests. But first, I'll need more coffee.
Well, thank you for sharing the story today, Beth.
You are so welcome.
Iceland has, you know, quite a famous, perhaps infamous, coffee culture. I would like to maybe just invite you to relay any anecdotes that you might personally have with Icelandic coffee culture.
Well, for me personally, I've always been a coffee drinker. I do drink tea, though. No hate to the tea lovers out there. and I remember when I first arrived, I thought, my goodness, this is strong coffee. And I've heard lots of stories from friends who visited the U.S. and they think it's, they call it like Minnesota water because the coffee is just ridiculously weak in their eyes. I do remember one particular afternoon where I asked my dear husband to make me a coffee, and I didn't say anything else. I just said, "Frodi, make me a coffee." And there, dear listeners, was my mistake, because he brought me this cup and I took a sip and I thought, my God, I can see through time. you have to be ready for the Icelandic strength of it. It's very strong if you're not used to it. I mean, they do not mess around. And you hear lots of stories from longtime fishermen and people like that whose coffee cups are like dyed black on the inside because they just are constantly filling it up with strong, strong coffee to get them through the day. I even had a friend. My friend only drinks water because he has seen the path of caffeine. His father apparently drank so much coffee that he would have to get up in the middle of the night and drink more coffee so that he could sleep.
That does kind of sound like an addiction.
Yeah, that gentleman, he was just overstimulated in a whole new way.
I will say on my end, it was always kind of interesting as a kid when we would, you know, visit relatives and stuff and be invited over for coffee. You know, I mean, as a child, you don't really understand the draw and appeal of coffee. And, you know, so I'm like, this is like in like the 90s, early 2000s. And I think that things have maybe changed a little bit. There's maybe a little bit more variety these days. But I mean, certainly, you know, like the standard offering was always, you know, like you go to visit a grandparent or an aunt or an uncle or something, and you sit down and there's a little spread of some pastries, like maybe some wiener bread or something like that. And then just like buckets and buckets of coffee.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, very often it's actually instant coffee.
Yes.
You know, I think that especially the older generation, like to them, that is still what coffee is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, just liters and liters of filter coffee. And it's really kind of just shocking, I think, like how much coffee can be consumed, especially on these, you know, kind of like familial visits when you just like on a Sunday afternoon, go and visit the cousins or something like that. Mm-hmm. Really just, yeah, that was always a big memory for me as a kid. It's just kind of like sitting at the table and everyone's just drinking coffee for hours.
I love that.
And, you know, of course, it's like a lovely experience, but as a kid, you don't really understand the appeal. You're just like,
yeah,
they're just talking for hours and drinking coffee.
And it's so bitter. I've also heard from non-coffee fans that, shocking, I know, but they say things like, you know, why doesn't it taste like it smells? Because it smells so good. And you always know when you walk in who's been brewing the coffee. But it can be very bitter. And, you know, for those of us who just love it for the energy, we just, it's just get it in you. I don't care if you have to pour it in my eyeballs. I need coffee. And it's one of these kind of things. As a food historian, I have to say, I love coffee. It's one of my favorite items because it's one of the few things that's inverted its meaning over time. Because as we said in our lovely article, you know, it was vital to things like, the French Revolution, for example, and all kinds of political change in Europe because it got people stimulated. It got people excited. The coffee house was a place where you'd gather to talk about big ideas. And of course, in the Industrial Revolution, you'd keep those factory workers going for 12 hours on the go. But as you said, for your aunties and uncles and all your family, it became this moment of relaxation. And, you know, take a minute for yourself and unwind and have a coffee, even though it's fundamentally a stimulant. So,
yeah, I mean, that is kind of funny how the connotations of, yeah, kind of relaxing, cozying up with a book or whatever. We do sometimes forget that it is literally a stimulant.
Yeah.
I mean, I have heard, I have read some historians kind of making the claim and, you know, like obviously like, in the field of history, one always has to be a little bit careful about these things. But, you know, I mean, really drawing a kind of causal connection with like not just coffee, obviously, but also tea, but, you know, and the Enlightenment itself, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, like obviously just having something to drink all day that is non-alcoholic is kind of a game changer actually. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, like you don't want to overstep the claim too much, you know, but I think that there is kind of an argument to be made for the Enlightenment itself, having been, you know, at least in some part caused by increased access to coffee, tea, and of course the culture that arises out of that.
Absolutely. The coffee house as a location, I mean, we know from today with big chains like Starbucks and things like that, They want to be your third place, which is what their corporate parlance is, because they want to be a place where you hang out other than your home or work. And this is actually returning to sort of the origins of the coffee house, because back in the day, when it became accessible enough through trade and prices had gone down enough that everyone could enjoy it, the coffee house became a place where you generally have like a long bench table and you just get seated according to when you came in. So you might be sitting next to, you know, somebody who works in the field, a farmer, a baron, a lord, you know, and you would be talking and exchanging ideas with all of these people because you were all there to enjoy a cup. And it didn't matter anything else. So this free exchange of ideas just really got carried forward into all sorts of social change.
This is obviously a bit far afield for Iceland. But, you know, I mean, in like the late 19th century, like in Vienna, for instance, cafes were really just like this institution. And I mean, there were like writers and thinkers who would really just have their office in cafes. Like you could get mail delivered to cafes, which I always just thought was really cool.
Is amazing. I love it.
But like in the Icelandic context, like just one of my favorite little passages, scenes from Laxness's famous book, Independent People. There's a couple, you know, just like wedding scenes, and like all the farmers are kind of partying and, you know, they're not drinking moonshine or anything. But what they're doing is just kind of drinking lots and lots of black coffee late into the night. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of their version of going wild. And I always thought that was very quaint.
Yes. I did also hear about priest's coffee before, after I finished writing the text of our article. And I was like, have you heard of this?
No, priest's coffee.
Yes, priest's coffee is apparently, you put about half a cup of coffee and then you drop an Icelandic coin into the bottom of the cup.
Okay.
Then you add enough brennivín, so that you can see the coin on the bottom again. And that's how you know it's ready to drink. And I just thought, my goodness, these priests are schnockered. I hope they are giving good advice to the people.
I will say that sounds pretty awful.
That's just a combination for the ages right there.
Yes. So how was it to visit Café Valeria? It's obviously a, you know, very beautiful location just under Mount Kirkjufell, which many travelers might recognize as a very kind of famous mountain on the Snæfellsnes Peninsula. Maybe you can just kind of talk me through like what it's like out there. Yeah.
Oh, yes. It's a very big open space. And of course, Kirkjufell gets a lot of press because it's one of our famous visuals. It's on a lot of things like postcards and picture books of Iceland. So it's been a while since I've been out towards the west. When I travel, usually I spend a lot of time in the south, which is typical because it's very green and sunny there. But it's just nice to have that reminder that there are so many beautiful, rugged places in Iceland. You really can't go wrong no matter which direction you're driving. Café Valeria, it was a lovely experience in every way. And I really have to thank Jan and Marta for that. They were just so welcoming and kind. And what Marta had said about, you know, I don't want to make this a giant franchise. I'm not trying to compete with Starbucks or Teo Coffee, which is the Icelandic version, things like that. In having her business, she's just looking to, you know, educate and bring something to the community and enjoy life. And I just thought, my God, this is amazing. And I think this is goals for all of us.
It is certainly very idyllic. If I'm not mistaken, there were two coffee plants growing in their store. How are those doing?
They are doing well. As I had to double check and say, you know, are you planning on trying to grow coffee in Iceland? And she was like, dear God, it won't happen. So yes, indeed. Coffee is one of those delicate plants that's a little finicky. It requires the right elevation and the right amount of sunlight and things like that that you just cannot guarantee in the fabulous ecology of Iceland. I really thought that was so interesting that they were just growing it to see if they could. and also to show people what it looks like when there is a sprout, or, you know, what the plants themselves look like. I had to say, I don't think until that moment, even I, being a food history researcher who is no stranger to a long night with a cup of coffee, I didn't know what an Arabica plant actually looked like.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was just, it was working. It was working on me as well, the educational aspect.
Certainly something that was very new for me. It was, I had never actually smelled like the green coffee beans.
Yes.
Come in imported in the sack like that.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I was really taken aback by just the kind of complex sweetness. And it was kind of, I don't know. I mean, like almost tangy or meaty in the way that like fermented things are.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was just really kind of interesting. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
I was just not really expecting green coffee beans to smell like that.
Yeah, it was absolutely sort of a green, sort of woody kind of smell, like vetiver or something like that. One of the grassy sort of scents. And I was just like, oh, it's because it's quite amazing that, you know, all the sugars in that fermentation process that are in the bean, in the seed, they just turn into this wonderful, dark, rich aroma that's so completely different from where it begins as a seed.
I was also surprised by a lot of the other products that they were able to kind of get out of the beans, whether it was this coffee cherry jam, which I had never tried before. And if I'm not mistaken, like there were also these kind of like using like the coffee husks to kind of make like little statues and stuff like that, like all organic,
yes.
Of course.
Yeah.
So that was just kind of neat to see.
Yeah, they did. They made earrings out of the coffee beans that were cute. And they had just thought about, what can we do as we're sitting here? And this is what we have around us. So let's just see. I had heard about the coffee cherries being able to be used, the flesh that's around the coffee bean, being able to be used to make jam, but I had no idea what it would taste like. And again, it was so sweet. It's very similar, at least to my palate, to dates or something like that. It was very sweet and rich.
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh, wow, this thing contains multitudes, man. This is great. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And, you know, now maybe hopefully travelers traveling to Iceland, the next time you enjoy a cup of coffee at a cafe somewhere, you know, just have a little bit more background as to why coffee is so special and important in Iceland.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Thanks so much for talking today, Beth.
You're welcome.
Deep North is the official podcast of Iceland Review, the oldest continuously running English language publication in Iceland, covering community, nature, and culture. If you enjoyed listening, please consider subscribing to Iceland Review at our website.